IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast supported by Pragati, a flagship media initiative of the Takshashila Institution. We're a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like to bring a fresh perspective to Indian affairs and an Indian perspective to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Welcome back to yet another episode of All Things Policy. Today, we are going to talk about a very interesting topic. It deals with the mental health and police, especially the Indian police. Now, mental health is a must for all jobs. Some jobs are more challenging than the other, and universally, if we see, policing is one of the toughest jobs. And in India, due to the skewed ratio of the police to the public, quality of training of our police personnel, and the different duties that our police are employed for, problem becomes even worse. Over the last 2 years, 1.5 years rather, when the world was grappling with the COVID pandemic, Indian police, like all other police all over the world, were, thrust into pandemic management duties. If we see, the Indian police are not really trained to deal with pandemics and other biological related or chemical related incidences, but yet our police were at the forefront of it. And this has led to a lot of stress amongst our police force. But this COVID-related stress is just one aspect, just one incident that has added to the stress of police. And there are many systemic challenges that have plagued our police throughout many years. And today, I, Ruturaj, and Aarti Ratnam would be discussing about this through the lens of, public policy. We both work at the Takshashila Institution, which is a think tank. And along with, public policy research, we also run a policy school. Aarti, would you like to inform our listeners about the upcoming batches and the other programs in brief?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Ruturaj. So as Ruturaj mentioned, we are a think tank, and now we have opened up admissions for a couple of programs. So there are a 12-week graduate certificate programs in public policy, defense and foreign affairs, technology and policy, and health and life sciences. In addition to this, we also have a longer program, which is the postgraduate program in public policy, which is a 48-week long program. And some general insights into our admission process. The program begins on the 15th of January in 2022. And you can avail an early bird scholarship of 10% if you apply by the 4th of December. And the deadline to apply for all programs is 8th Jan 2022. So I think now we can get started into the topic at hand.
Sure, Aarti. So what I would like to begin with is describing a term called first responders. So what is a first responder? Who is a first responder? Any person who, reaches a particular event which might lead to a law and order problem or an event which is deviating from the norm. Now, it can be, silly or funny as a proverbial cat stuck up a tree, to ranging from that, it might range to a domestic dispute, or it can also be a mass casualty event where several people are injured or possibly dead. Now, police are, of course, one of the first responders. The other first responders being firefighters and paramedics. Somehow in India, we do not have the culture of paramedics, but we do have firefighters and police, and our police, more often than not, are the first responders. Now, what happens is that the uncertainty of the event can itself be a huge stress-inducing thing for any first responders. And in our case, in India's case, most of the first responders are not the officer class, of course, but the constabulary. And they are anyway overburdened. And along with that, they have to, deal with angry mobs, counterinsurgency operations, traffic control, VIP security, religious festivals, and so on and so forth. So the Indian police, as we mentioned, is really overburdened. And along with that, because of things like political interventions, the low rank, lack of, support, even right from up to the level of the quality of the uniform and public transport for them to, cross the city limits or wherever they are posted, can add to a lot of stress. Now, I would like to bring in Aarti here to, you know, bring in some hard facts regarding the stress-induced events that our police face. But before that, I would also like to harp on the point that the police were heavily involved in pandemic duties, and especially in states and cities which were particularly hit badly, especially Mumbai, the police also suffered COVID deaths. Along with the state police, the CRPF, which was deployed across different states in a supporting role for the state police, were also badly infected. The infection rates of police was 2.37 compared to just 0.3 for average Indians. So we can see that for a really tiny force, which just is into lakhs compared to our 1.4 billion, the infection rate was nearly three times. So that just shows how stretched the police were and how involved they were in the last 1.5 years. And that has led to a rise in their stress levels and other things. Now, turning back to Aarti, who has certain hard stats about this.
Yeah. So now, before we get into the facts, we would like to issue a trigger warning because we are discussing the topic of suicide and we do want to be mindful to our listeners. So we know, as Ritaraj said, that the effect of the pandemic was seen by various people, including police officers. And in a survey that was conducted by the Punjab Police, 10.6% of police personnel had significant anxiety and 18% have significant depressive symptoms. But now this is only focused on one state. It's really hard to know the exact extent of the effect of the pandemic across India because one of the issues with mental health is a lack of data. So it would be hard for us to find out how badly it has affected individuals across the country. But these mental health issues are not restricted to just the pandemic. These incidents have occurred even before that. Between 2016 and 2019, as many as 59 police officers died by suicide. Again, because of the lack of data, it's hard to know the exact extent of how many police officers have been affected by this. And even more recently, in November of this year, it was reported that a CRPF officer had shot 7 of his colleagues because of psychological imbalance. And you can see how the toll of such a job does impact not only you as an individual, but the people around you, your colleagues, your families. And it's really important that we dive into this and find some solutions. So I'm gonna hand it back to Ritaraj to see if there are any initiatives that have been taken up by the government, either locally or centrally.
Yeah, thanks, Aarti. I would like to point out another fact that this survey that the Punjab Police commissioned was just for its officers. And of course, with the negative association of, you know, psychological evaluations or even talking to a counselor, I'm pretty sure these stats are, you know, severely underreported. And the constabulary would be bearing the brunt of this because those would be the people on the streets, literally on the streets day and night. And the 10% and 18% number that just the officers reported would definitely be much higher in the constabulary class. Also, the suicides that Aarti mentioned, this was just one state police, that is Kerala Police, over 3 years. And we don't know how well the data is, you know, collected, as she mentioned. So this number, again, could be severely underreported. Yeah. Now, are these... We bought these couple of incidences to show that how stress can, you know, affect mental health, and the manifestation can be different from, you know, self-harm to a person losing his cool and shooting his colleagues. And this can have a very negative impact in the force because to use a very cliched, you know, terminology, it's close-knit band of brothers sort of community. And when something like this happens, when a CRPF personnel shoots his own colleagues, it can have ripple effects that can affect the entire, you know, unit, not just the family, but even others. So talking about this is not going to help. We need certain programs to address this. The first, of course, is to gather data to see how severe the problem is and then to act on it. Our cursory research didn't throw up many things. What we saw were there are these sporadic, you know, programs or certain institutes just taking up case studies, which are, of course, retrospective, just to see how severe the problem is. But what we saw overall was there are no systematic interventions placed within the normal functioning of the police, be it CRPF or state, to tackle these issues. I would like to mention a few programs which are trying to help the police, but as I said, we need far, far more programs. Now, one of the stats that RP mentioned was the 59 police officers died by suicide in Kerala in 2016 and 2019. And after that, Kerala started a program called Help and Assistance to Tackle Stress, a HATS program. And that has somehow helped people. According to its own stats, around 4,000 people have approached this in-house counseling service because they were depressed or they were really stressed out. And this acts as a suicide prevention as well as a general counseling service for the Kerala police. Another study of sorts is one being conducted by IIM Lucknow, that is Indian Institute of Management Lucknow. They are trying to look at the behavioral pattern of CRPF, that is the Central Reserve Police Force, who work under extreme conditions. As the listeners might be aware, the CRPF is involved in areas which have Naxal presence, and they are at the forefront of deadly gun battles. So IIM is looking at a very particular case study, that how CRPF personnel fare under such conditions. There are a few think tanks, you know, like Police Foundation India, which is working for overall police reforms. But one thing I liked about this, they have a dedicated set of people also looking at trying to include psychological help for the police. There's one thing that stuck out, that there's a relatively new institute in Hyderabad, which is the Police Academy, and it's supposed to act as a reservoir of all good practices across state, different state police. And when state police do their mid-career training in a central agency at Hyderabad, then the best practices would be exchanged. But none of their programs have any psychological training involved, and it seemed a bit sad that a new institute touted to, you know, collate all the best practices from all over India and all over the world, because they have certain tie-ups with Interpol and other EU agencies and Israeli police as well, don't seem to have mental health training as one of their core, even on their basic training. And the other things that Indian police are doing is they are trying to recruit psychologists and conduct psychometric tests during the recruitment process. This is especially true for CRPF, because average CRPF Jawan faces far more stressful conditions. So this is one good measure that you're trying to see assess the mental health, mental well-being and mental stability, emotional stability of a person before sending them into a stressful condition. But what is required is that even after this, even after you select the best person and send him out, there will be encounters, there will be stressful conditions. But what happens after that? We don't seem to have anything systematic in place for that. For example, let's say LAPD, that is LA, Los Angeles Police Department, what they have is a detailed psychological evaluation every time an officer is involved in any shooting, firing, or a physical confrontation. So there is, every time this happens, there is an inquiry, there is an internal inquiry. But part of the internal inquiry, an integral part of the internal inquiry, is a psychological evaluation of the officer and also counseling, because such an event, such a traumatic event, can have far-lasting effects on the particular officer or Jawan. And as I mentioned earlier, because it's a tight-knit community, well-being of one person will affect the entire unit as such. But sadly, in India, we don't seem to have these systemic programs. We have very sporadic events, like, you know, a weekend or a 2-day long wellness retreat for certain police, or a yoga session or meditation session. Yes, these are helpful to a certain extent, but what we need is far, far more and far, far more systematic. On this, let's take a break. And when we return, we will talk about the other aspect, that how police as a first responder can tackle mental health. Welcome back, everyone. Let's dive into the second part of our podcast. Aarti, do you want to sort of take the lead and tell us what the Indian police manual says about a duty of a police officer when it comes to mental illness?
Yeah. But before we get into that, I would just like to talk about, you know, in an international context, how things are. And so I was living in London in 2019 and 2020, especially when the pandemic hit. And obviously, you know, because everybody was in lockdown, it started affecting a lot of people's mental health, particularly for people who live alone, because, you know, isolation was really getting to them. And a lot of people's mental health was being affected. And it got me thinking, you know, how, aside from we individuals as a community, how can, you know, the public also do something about it? As, you know, aside from doctors, you know, other people who are involved in creating a sort of support system. So I had the opportunity to interact with a few police officers because there was an incident that took place. It was at my student accommodation and there were a couple of police personnel outside my accommodation. And I went up to them and I spoke to them, you know, to find out what was happening. And that's when they told me that in the UK, the first people who respond to a mental health crisis are the cops, even before the paramedics can arrive. So this clearly shows you that even the cops are trained to deal with a mental health crisis. In case the paramedics don't arrive on time, there is somebody else to be around the person who is mentally unstable to ensure that they don't make any irrational decisions. Okay, so in comparison to the Indian context, we were curious to see what kind of guidelines were available. So there is a section of the handbook where it says that every officer in charge of a police station will have the duty to take under protection any person who is found wandering at large within the limits of the police station, wherein the officer has reason to believe that the person is mentally unstable. It also includes in case that the officer believes that this person is a risk to himself or others because of his mental illness, and following which the officer in charge will inform the person who has been taken into protection that the grounds for which he was taken, and also to find someone who can possibly assist him and then see how to take things forward from there. But this is pretty much the only thing that is available. There isn't enough information to see what the next steps are, whether the police will reach out to a medical professional. So it is a little vague in this context. So I think it's important that we get into the finer details of it a little more. So this is one aspect. Additionally, there has been a program that's introduced by NIMHANS, where it is actually a diploma course where the whole idea is to have master trainers in the police department who will train police personnel on physical and mental well-being. What's interesting about this is that it's not just for the police officer, but also extends to their families as well, so that it can help family members to support either the police officer or someone nearby, or even in their own family, to figure out the best way to deal with mental health issues. Now, again, this is just theoretical. We aren't sure about the extent to which this is being implemented because of lack of data, which brings me to the final point that I think is really important to address. Now that we've raised the issue, we know that there are programs involved. What more can we do to ensure this is being implemented? So what can we do as individuals, or what can we do as a community at large to ensure that these changes are being implemented? So what do you think, Ritraj?
Yeah, first of all, of course, as you said, we need data. We need lots of data because this problem is an endemic problem that goes into the decades. Probably it has its, you know, origins from the colonial style of the police and colonial era. And now, because no one has addressed these problems, it has sort of become an institution culture. I mean, we were talking to Javed Ahmed, who recently joined Dr. Sheila as a senior researcher, and he was pretty candid about saying that, you know, domestic abuse in the families of police is a known thing because it's a way the police sort of take it out, and it has become a systematic issue. It has become an institutional sort of a practice, if I can, you know, be bold enough to use this word. So the problem, the first thing that we need to tackle is, of course, we need to accept the fact that the police is really stressed and we need more data. And these programs that have been introduced by various state departments seem very sporadic and far and in between. And also, if we see, it's mostly directed to the officer class. But what we see is that the lower ranks, the constabulary, who is literally on the streets, is one of the most stressed portion of the police force. And they don't have, they also, of course, also come from slightly lower socioeconomic strata. So they have those stressors along with the stress of the force. So what we need is the police, including the police force, different states, including mental health as one of their main points. So, and when I say mental health, I'm talking both aspects of it, the mental health of its police force, as well as how the police force will deal with mental health scenarios. And this primarily has to be, you know, focused at the lower ranks, because I think that is sort of the base of the pyramid, and that needs more support. The officers, I'm not saying that the officers are not stressed. They have different worries. They have transfers, and they have to deal with the politicians and the political interference to a greater extent. They also have a lot of paperwork and judicial work. Their stresses are slightly different, but they are a bit better off because of the way the police structures are, the police force is structured, the IPS, the All India Cadre, and then the state ranks. So both these types of people have challenges and different needs, and the central as well as state really needs to accept that their police is really mentally sick, because these 18% numbers are hard to believe. I'm pretty sure like more than 50% are really stressed, and pump in more money. I would say more money for mental health professionals than, you know, fancy equipment might make the police far more efficient.
Yeah, I completely agree with, you know, everything that you said. And it's so important that we raise this issue, because in India, there is such a stigma around mental health in general. And I think one of the few good things the pandemic has brought about is the fact that more people are starting to talk about mental health, whether as, you know, citizens or for the police personnel. And I think it's really important that we continue having this conversation and try and come up with more policies to support the public at large, as well as, you know, the policemen of our country. And we hope to see the necessary changes soon. And yeah, I think that's about it.
Okay, on this note, let's end this podcast.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle, @TakshashilaInst, or our website, takshashila.org.in.
Hey, it's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On All Things Policy, Ananya Desai and Rohan Pai discuss recurrent bans on fireworks during festive seasons in India and discuss possible solutions to tackle India's air pollution problem. On the Habit Coach podcast, Ashton Doctor welcomes Sahil Mehta, an esteemed mountaineer and author of the book Break Free. Sahil shares a transformative experience which became the catalyst for embracing discipline and fulfillment. The episode explores the profound impact of vulnerability on personal growth. Folks, if you like our shows, do spread the word. Tell your friends and don't forget to rate and review them wherever you're listening to them. Follow us on social media. We are IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. You'll also find all our shows on YouTube at youtube.com/IVM Podcasts. And finally, we would like to thank our sponsors this week. Omidyar Network India, Abbott, IDFC First Bank and Save Life Foundation. Thank you for making this possible.